Hello, and welcome to Between the Sessions, coming to you from the Palm Beaches, Florida. Between the Sessions is a podcast for meetings industry professionals presented by the Palm Beaches. I'm your host, Kelly Cavers. Our mission is to inspire those in the business events industry with new and innovative ideas and discuss important developments impacting the meetings industry in the U.S. and globally. Today, I'm incredibly excited to announce our guest, Miguel Neves, the editor-in-chief for SCIF Meetings. Miguel, tell us a little bit about yourself and really how you got into the industry.
Well, thank you for having me, Kelly. Delighted to be here. I've been in the industry about 15 years or so, probably a bit more now. I'm getting a little older now. I actually started in the music industry. I'm from Portugal originally, and the music industry in Portugal is tiny. So I explored that for a while, have lots of funny stories to tell, you know, over drinks, but eventually figured out the music industry wasn't really a place where you could kind of have a good business career. So I started working on events. I did the MTV European Music Awards in 2005. And that was I played a very small part in that, but really enjoyed that experience. And then I kind of started volunteering and working small jobs at corporate events. And then eventually moved to the UK to do a degree, a master's in conference and events management at the University of Westminster. And really kind of, I was very conscious that I wanted to build my career and I needed to meet people. I needed to network. I needed to just understand the industry. And so I did that very consciously in the UK I spent about 10 years in the UK, did a planner role with a small meeting planning firm, ended up working for IMEX, the trade show, who I think many of the listeners will be familiar with. And then kind of went out solo for a few years. And now I live in Denmark. I have a young family and I am the editor-in-chief of SCIF Meetings, which I like to believe is one of the leading publications in the space for conference and event managers. And yeah, it's my first sort of editorial job. I like to think that I've worked lots of different angles of the industry and I have a decent understanding of the industry. That's me in a nutshell.
Yeah, you have a very interesting background, a very exciting background. Did you do IMEX overall?
Yeah, we did. I was actually there. I just started when IMEX America was launched. So the European show has been going for about 20 years. And then I guess 10 years ago, IMEX America launched and I was there. I didn't go to the first one. I actually did it remotely because I was working on the social media at the time. So I kind of covered what was happening mainly on Twitter at that time, sort of remotely, which is a really interesting experience. And then, yeah, I worked on two shows a year, essentially those two shows. And IMEX, I don't know anybody familiar with IMEX, they're kind of a real partnership-based company. So they partner with so many different associations and bodies across the industry. So it's a really interesting company to work for to kind of understand all the different parts of the industry.
Well, tell us a little bit, now you're at SCIF Meetings, and tell us a little bit about the mission with SCIF Meetings.
So SCIF Meetings evolved from a company called EventMB, which was kind of more focused on event technology, and it was an acquisition from SCIF, and it rebranded to SCIF Meetings last year in May. And really, we're really kind of bringing that SCIF ethos into the meetings and event side of the industry. And I like to think about SCIF as sort of like the Financial Times or the Bloomberg of travel. It's very much about editorial excellence and reporting on things in a fair but accurate manner. And really the vision with SCIF Meetings is to do the same thing for meetings and events. You know, we don't publish, you know, press releases. We go after the real stories and the real events that are happening in the industry. And we really focused on innovation. That's our kind of main focus. So new ways of doing things. And that can be anything from sustainability to marketing to DEI to just great event design. If you're doing something different, if you're innovating, if you're trying different things, and if you're kind of creating better meetings and better events, then we want to know about it. And I think that our audience wants to know about it too.
Yeah, absolutely. So some of the topics that are occurring today, what excites you the most in today's meetings landscape?
I think it's a really interesting time because I think for a long time we were focused on this idea of recovery, of sort of getting back to where we were in 2019. And fortunately, I think in most instances, we're sort of there or close. I think there's a lot of different ways to look at it. But I think we're getting to a point where we're starting to really evolve and starting to think beyond that recovery. You know, luckily, you know, knock on wood, I think we're in a good place there. But there are conflicts happening in the world right now, unfortunately, which may disrupt that or not. But I think in general, meetings and events are in a place where they can really begin to innovate. And that can be through technology, that can be through DEI, that can be through inclusivity, that can be through lots of different ways. But I think it's an exciting time. You know, for a while, we talked a lot about hybrid meetings and virtual meetings. And we went through this period of like, oh, I hate virtual meetings and hybrid meetings are too complicated. But now we're kind of seeing things develop. You know, we're seeing that if the meeting, if the speaker is interesting enough, if there's really high quality content, then a hybrid setup makes sense. I don't think a lot of companies are necessarily talking about meetings as hybrid, but there is a sort of way to participate online and there is a way to participate in person. And that's exciting. But even, you know, when we're talking just about in-person meetings, I think we're really starting to look at really, you know, really kind of precise objectives for events. Really understanding how a destination, how an experience really changes the way we interact with people. For example, when we're talking about corporate events, when I go for incentives, when I go for anything that really is designed to build those relationships with our coworkers. And I think because a lot of us are working remotely, or that's, you know, that's a part of a lot of people's lives, I think that's more important than ever. And I think we're at a stage where we're really trying to see what the next evolution of that is. And what excites me most is that it really values meetings and events. You know, this idea of people coming together and gathering, I think for a long time, things happen on a bit of a cycle, of a bit of a, you know, we did it last year. The company seems to want to do it. We're going to do it again this year. But I think now we're really thinking about how those events, those gatherings impact companies, impact organizations. And I'm really happy that we're doing that because it also protects the industry. Because when we have a crisis situation or we have something happening that we don't like or that kind of prevents us from gathering, there's that danger that events will suddenly be cut. And the more we can, you know, take it seriously and really kind of prove that events are really worth doing, then I think we have a much better chance of holding on to those budgets and keeping people gathering in the way that, you know, we'd like to do. So I think that's really exciting. And there's lots there. Happy to go in any direction that you want, but there's lots of exciting stuff.
Yeah, there definitely is. And when you say, you know, the exciting thing that meetings and events can have on an organization or a business, I look at it even more so on the impact that it has on a destination and how it can really change the livelihood of not just that organization that's having the event, but the impact that it has, you know, on the destination, small businesses, and our environment. As you look at kind of moving into the future, let's talk about the idea of the leisure traveler, you know, as they come in for the business event and the leisure. Give us a high-level overview of your definition of what you see as leisure travel and how that's impacting the meetings industry moving into the future.
Yeah, it's a really interesting topic because we've actually been kind of trying to cover that and try to understand it ourselves. And it's a bit of a tricky one because leisure or blended travel, that kind of concept, I think that's existed with meetings and events for a long time. You know, the idea that people come in for a one-day meeting, two-day meeting, and then they extend or they try to wrap up, you know, with different things happening on either end. You know, we could think about that as blended travel or not. But I think events and meetings have always been sort of a part of that. I think where it changes is this idea of people being remote or either working remotely and not having necessarily an office or just being so comfortable with working from the road. Again, this in our part of the industry, that's not necessarily anything new, but more and more across other industries, people are just, you know, equipped and ready to work from anywhere. And that opens up a whole kind of range of possibilities when it comes to blended travel. Of course, you know, most destinations would like to keep people at the destination when they come for an event and sort of get them to extend for leisure or maybe combine different kind of business objectives that they're doing there. But I think where it becomes kind of interesting is how that impacts the traditional kind of, for example, the days of the week that we hold events. You know, events are usually sort of midweek. Tuesdays, Wednesdays are kind of the strongest events. But if you're kind of proposing that, hey, a lot of people are going to want to extend for the weekend, then maybe Thursdays and Fridays aren't so bad either, right? And I think that kind of thing, it's very hard to measure precisely because hotels don't necessarily have statistics on exactly why people are there. You know, usually ask kind of guests if they're there for business or pleasure, but business can mean a lot of different things, right? And so the hotel doesn't really mind what part of business people are staying there for, but to actually kind of understand how events impact that is a little hard. But I think that's interesting because it enables us to open other opportunities, right? Other kind of days of the week that are open. Also, you know, obviously that impacts the price, and with the cost of meetings and events kind of rising and a lot of people quite concerned with that, having more flexibility over the days of the week that you're meeting, I think is interesting. The other side of that, and I think it's something that the Palm Beaches will very likely benefit from, is this idea of holding events in destinations that are very appealing to people from the leisure perspective, from the personal perspective. Again, nothing new, but if you consider that more people on average have that flexibility to work from anywhere, you then want to equip or want to kind of promote the destination as, hey, why don't you come a week early and work from the beach for a week, right? You're probably not going to get everybody coming a week early, but if people have that flexibility and if you can give them a good rate or whatever it is that's possible, then that's a real business opportunity there. You know, people are going to get on a plane and travel. So there's added business opportunities there for destinations that I think, again, won't change everything dramatically, but really interesting to sort of become part of the strategy.
Yeah. Have you seen, from a supplier standpoint, anything that a supplier is doing, whether that's a hotel, a destination, that's really leaning in to help support that leisure travel?
I think the biggest changes we've seen is on the hotel side. I think a lot of hotels are almost becoming offices. That idea that, you know, you need a co-working space. Because when you're, if you think about it, when you're working remotely, you do need to have those meeting spaces. You do need that sort of almost like a flexible office space to really make the most of your day. And yes, you can, you know, you can do most of your work from your hotel bedroom or hotel room, just like you would from maybe your office at home or whatever. But when you want to meet people, when you have conference calls, anything like that, then you need that extra flexibility, right? And maybe you need a bit of a distraction, or maybe you're staying with a partner and they're in the room or they're doing stuff and you don't want to just sit there and work the whole time. So hotels, a lot of hotels we're seeing are really kind of equipping themselves more for being offices, right? More for being that sort of the flexible workspace. This is happening more in the cities, but there are some kind of destination and kind of resort properties that are also doing this, kind of acknowledging that people might be there on leisure, but also want to have a workspace and want to be able to do that. So I think that's just sort of the inevitable design of hotels that's changing. And I think to really match this trend.
Yeah, I think that's important as you talk about this. This really inspires me and us as a destination is, you know, why we might be known as that for that leisure traveler. Business still happens here and it's easy to get it done. And we have the availability and the support to do so, whether it's through the hotel products that are offering those type of those spaces that allow you to go do that, or that, you know, ease of access to different things. So that's great. Thank you for sharing that. Okay. So how would you recommend a planner to encourage an attendee to extend their trips pre and post?
I think it's all down to the marketing message, right? I think it's often, you know, destinations that are attractive are often part of the marketing message for an event. And when I say this, I'm talking more about, associations and those kind of events, right? Where the attendee has to book their own travel, where they are kind of deciding if they want to go, et cetera. So I think the important thing there is to move that option, to move those offers kind of earlier in the process. Because in my experience, a lot of events will offer, you know, the shoulder night for hotel rooms or something like that. But it's often sort of like at the end of the registration process or sort of in the confirmation email, hey, if you want to do this, you know, you can kind of extend or do whatever. And I think that needs to happen way earlier in the process. Now, I'm not suggesting that events sort of market themselves as just a big kind of holiday, because I think that kind of goes against the ethos and what we're trying to achieve with these events. But I think it's important that when people are considering if they're attending an event, then that idea of, hey, I think this might be an interesting event and I get to do this leisure thing around that event, which will be really fun for me, for my family, etc. I think that needs to happen way earlier in the process. And I think we need to look at ways to do that in a respectful way, in a sort of like, you know, keep the focus on the event, but then make the destination shine there. And if there are offers, if there's, you know, good rates happening on shoulder nights, if there's special offers for attendees, make sure those are kind of really obvious early on. I think that's definitely something that events and destinations, you know, when they partner with events, if they can facilitate that, if they can make that easier, if there's a sort of like landing page where you can see the options in one go for each event. I think something like that would be really important at that decision phase. And that decision phase can be like a year before the event, right? Which makes it sometimes hard to make very, very kind of solid offers. But people can be thinking about event for a long time before they commit to booking. So it needs to be part of that consideration.
When you say it needs to be, you know, much earlier on, can you define how much earlier on? Like, what do you mean by that?
I just feel that a lot of, so attending IMEX, for example, let's use IMEX as an example that, you know, I know well. When you look at all the things that happen around IMEX, a lot of them only kind of show up. A lot of them only get confirmed very close to the show, or relatively close to the show, let's say a couple of months before the show, something like that. And at that point, I think a lot of people have made their plans. So suddenly sort of showing up a day before or 2 days before or staying on is going to be harder because maybe they have other plans, changing flights, etc. So wherever possible, if those kind of things can be done quite far in advance and made obvious on the event webpage, you know, and this is tricky because a lot of events won't have the program finalized. They won't have, you know, a lot of things structured. But if there's a way to talk about the options around those pleasure opportunities, then I think it's a really, you know, added bonus for the destination. And I think that can really benefit the destination.
Yeah, I believe for myself, when I am an attendee at an event, after signing up, registering for the event, I feel if I was marketed to from a social platform, like the activities surrounding the area, let's say it's Las Vegas, I could see myself changing my plans a little bit because I'm inspired by something that's popping up or something like that. Like, oh, wait, I'm going to be there. Maybe I should just extend it a day or two.
Exactly. So it's all about finding ways how to do that holistically, right? You know, does it just need to be quite prominent on the event website, or is there another way to kind of bring people into an ecosystem where they can explore those, right? I mean, I'm quite guilty when I book for an event. There's also that idea of, do I book the flight first? Do I register first? Because flights are quite tricky in a lot of situations to change, right? So if you're going to extend, that has to be part of the thinking. And that's why I'm saying we need to do this way earlier and sort of have those opportunities way earlier. Because if you get that order wrong and you find out about something, it suddenly becomes quite appealing and then you can't do it, then it's a real shame. So that's why I kind of focus on this timing and understanding the booking process as much as possible.
Yeah, I agree. So just question for you, what do you book first? Do you register? Do you book your flight? Or do you book your hotel? What's your process?
I think it's registration, flight, then hotel, unless the hotel is sort of part of the registration process, which sometimes it is. But I think the important thing is also, that's when I've made a decision and then I go through those steps in that order. Mm-hmm. But we need to be getting in people's minds way before that decision is made, because even if I book flight afterwards, I'm already probably favorited a few flights. I already kind of know what options I have way in advance. I'm going to change days, or, you know, if I want to do a stopover or whatever, that's going to change my flight pattern. So I think we need to kind of make sure we're in people's minds way before that.
Yeah, right. So it's taking that list of attendees that went to the event the year before, marketing it holistically, and then getting before they register.
Part of that event marketing, you know, it has to be, you know, you're going to this great destination, or we want you to come to this great destination. You may also want to do all these other cool things, or maybe you just want to rest for a few days and take advantage of being in a beautiful location.
Yeah. So as we talk about trends and we talk about leisure being a definite trend, when I look at, you know, the market, I a lot of times categorize into like an association or a corporate event. Are there any trends that you see kind of rising higher to the top in the corporate world more so than the association world, or do you feel that it's equal amongst each area?
I think a lot of them are balanced and kind of apply to everybody. I think on the corporate world, there is a really big focus on corporate spend, on that ROI, that return on investment from events. I think we've come from a period during the COVID pandemic where a lot of companies didn't travel that much, didn't hold that many events. And in many industries, they did pretty well, right? So you had a lot of sort of CFOs kind of asking, do we need to spend all this money? Do we need to travel all this much? Do we need to gather everybody? I believe the answer is yes. I think the results are very different, but it is important to kind of make sure that you're measuring or make sure that you're kind of tracking the benefits you get from gathering. So I think that's happening more on the corporate side than it is on the association side. I think on the association side, on the other hand, there is an element of, in a similar tone, but that element of sort of mergers and whether associations and certain bodies kind of make sense to exist. So there's a lot of questioning of a lot of, even on the medical side and things like that, associations sometimes merge. Some associations came out of the COVID pandemic not very well financially, you know, kind of really suffering in terms of member dues, etc. And so there's a sort of, can we merge these two events? Does it make sense to have this separate association? And that's kind of a different conversation to what's happening in the corporate side. But when it comes to the practical event side, I think the trends are similar. You know, there's this sort of like costs involved, a lot of people trying to do more with less, contracts are more complicated than ever. So there's a lot of things that are evolving. And I think a lot of people are kind of saying, hey, stop the world, let's stop everything and you know, kind of analyze this. But things are moving very fast. And of course, there's one of my favorite topics, AI, which is kind of upending everything. I think a lot of people have big hopes for AI, but it is a disruptor, right? And I think it's going to change the way we work and change the way we do stuff. So we're still tracking that closely and seeing how that evolves.
Yeah, I absolutely think the AI is a trend that we need to lean into as a support tool of how can it really help us, you know, in so much of what we do and speed to market, you know, times where, you know, you thought it would take, I don't know, to write something and AI can do it for you as a tool. But I mean, you have to have a lot of input into that. So those are the things that I'm seeing also here.
Yeah. And AI is evolving very quickly, right? So I think AI is going to be part of every tool that we use almost, or probably, you know, I mean, we're using a software program to record this podcast. I'm pretty sure it uses AI or there's some AI involved here. The way we book our flights, the way we write our marketing, the way we choose our images, all of that is going to have AI assisting. Whether if it's very obviously AI, like you're generating images using AI, or whether it's just AI helping you find that great shot of the destination that you need for a marketing campaign, AI is going to be a part of that. And it's just how we work. So in a way, it's almost irrelevant to talk about AI separately. It's just how technology evolves. And like, you know, we couldn't do our jobs today, at least in this way, without technology all around us. So it's just going to get more and more. And we need to kind of keep up with it.
That's great. Definitely very inspiring, and it makes you want to think differently and make sure we embrace those industry disruptors. Okay. So as you know, before we sign off here, one of the questions that we like to say, and one of the things that we do here in the Palm Beaches is we like to say we elevate that between the sessions experience when meetings or events come here that really kind of create something to be meaningful and memorable. So can you share with us your favorite between the sessions memory, activity, or experience that you've had?
That's a great question. I love that between the sessions. I think that that sort of makes bring the destination into play, not only, you know, of where the event is located, but what you can do in between the sessions, as you say. I'm trying to think of kind of unique ones, but I mean, I've been involved with MPI for a really long time, and I've done a number of kind of European and global events. And I think the connection points between those events and the kind of connecting with the attendees in or around the events, I think those have been really, really special and memorable. And yeah, there's a lot to kind of, there's a lot of different variations of that to unpack. But I remember, for example, being in Orlando in, I think 2011, one, you know, in the same state in Florida, for MPI WEC. And I remember, having all sorts of activities around, you know, all the Orlando facilities and all the parks and et cetera around there. And those were just you know, special and memorable because you're kind of able to experience that destination and you're experiencing it with, you know, friends or colleagues that aren't necessarily sort of normally part of your travel plans as a family or something like that, but you're experiencing it in a different way. So I remember going to Epcot Center, for example, as one of the events and kind of enjoying that opportunity. So there's a lot to be said about that. And I think the more we can be proactive about it, I think the more we can take out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's taking, you know, that business professional relationship that you have and leaning into the leisure moments that mm-hmm. we are able to experience and have it become very memorable.
Yeah, I'll give you another example. So we, also with MPI, we were in Rome 2018. And then a group of us, which we call the MPI Fun Committee, which is a small group of sort of just people that have been in and around MPI for a long time. It's a very informal WhatsApp group-based kind of committee. But we stayed on. We planned to stay on. And so we went to Sicily. We went to Palermo after this meeting in Rome. So we took a short flight and we stayed there for, I think, 3 nights. I think there was a group of 8 or 9 of us. And we just explored a new destination in a completely different kind of scenario. And we were there very much as just, you know, kind of individuals, not trying to be official or trying to be kind of MPI leadership or anything like that. We were just there enjoying ourselves as people, as tourists. And we had a few DMCs reach out to us and sort of help us sort out a few kind of events and activities. And it was a magical experience. We actually ended up being invited to a dinner with a venue that was a kind of a magical palace in the middle of Palermo. And it was just very unusual, but it's just those kind of between the sessions. This wasn't quite in between the sessions. It was more like after the sessions, but it's the same kind of idea.
It's the same. It's the same. That's the same. Oh, how fun. Very cool. Okay, so as we end the podcast, one of the things that we like to say is stuff we all get, right? When we go to a meeting or event, we like to get that swag, stuff we all get. And so what we like to ask our guest, Miguel, is a tip or a piece of advice rather than this is what we're going to give you, we're going to give to our listener. At the end of this episode is like, what tip or piece of advice could you share with the audience that you feel is incredibly valuable?
In for any specific topic,
anything,
just
anything.
Anything. I think probably my tip takeaway would be to understand the journey of the people that you're attracting. And what I mean by that is, you know, we talked about it a little bit earlier. We talk about pleasure and that kind of idea. And we talked about that booking process and understanding when we have to attract those people to our destination. And I think the more you can put yourself in their shoes, the better job you're going to be able to do that. Because I think a lot of times we make assumptions of when people book something or when people are attracted to something, how do we influence them? And I think sometimes we get it wrong. And I'll give you a very tangible example. That I think we can then kind of translate into different types of work. I worked for an association for a few years, an association of transplant surgeons. And I was working on email marketing and kind of attracting them to a transplant surgeon conference. And the most of the advice you get around email marketing is make your emails very short, very digestible, very easy to read, so that you can click on something and kind of register, or there's some action point. I think that's the kind of advice that you get for most emails. But what I didn't realize was that transplant surgeons spend the vast majority of their day on their feet, and they essentially wait in kind of public areas for organs to become available, and then they go and do what transplant surgeons do, which means that they don't have a lot of opportunity to, they don't normally have a desk. They don't normally have a laptop or kind of a desktop computer. They're usually on their phones. And so what actually works really well for email marketing for transplant surgeons is to provide everything in the email, which means you end up with these very long, full of text emails that are sort of like mini websites. But that's what works. If you're only on your phone and when you click on something, it's not optimized for your phone, then that's what works. And so I just use this as an example of if you really understand your audience, then you're going to start marketing to them very differently and communicating with them very differently. And I think that's something that we could all kind of benefit from or do better in meetings and events.
I think meetings and events, personally, professionally, in all areas, like who is your audience? I could not agree with you more. And I think one of our greatest assets that we have here in the Palm Beaches is our customer advisory board. The more that we lean into them, we always see much greater results. And quite frankly, it just makes it easier, right? Because you're just leaning into what they want. So they gravitate to that and it's a little bit easier to sell. So thank you for sharing that. And I couldn't agree with you more. So as we sign off, where's the best place for our listeners to learn a little bit more about you?
Well, skiffmeetings.com is our publication. So we release stories every day and we do as much coverage as we can of the meetings and events industry. I'm quite active on LinkedIn. So just look me up, Mikhail Nevsh on LinkedIn. I post quite a bit, so it should be pretty easy to find.
Great. Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate your time. And thank you for joining the show today. Between the Sessions is part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network. Thank you for listening in, and you can always look at us at thepalmbeaches.com.